is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
That's what, you know, really got me started in this, is there were a lot of coaches just saying, hey, we need you to step up and lead. And there wasn't a whole lot more teaching or education with that. So I started, you know, looking at what the best leaders were doing and talking to the coaches and asking them, hey, what do you need from your leaders? And put together what we have now as our team captain's leadership manual. And it breaks down leadership into a bunch of different things. But one of the things where we start with is being a leader by example. And as most of your coaches know, the leader by example may not say a whole lot, but they're one of your hardest workers at practice.
Widely considered the world's top expert on sports leadership, Jeff Jansen is the founder and president of the Jansen Sports Leadership Center. Jeff and his top-notch team's pioneering work on sports leadership development with student-athletes and coaches has led to the creation of cutting-edge leadership academies at some of the top universities and high schools throughout the country. A prolific author, Jeff has authored numerous books, including The Team Captain's Leadership Manual, Jeff Jansen's Peak Performance Playbook, How to Develop Relentless Competitors, and The 7 Secrets of Successful Coaches. After you listen to my conversation with Jeff Jansen, jump over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating and review. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe right now and visit our website at www.hoopheadspod.com. There you'll find every episode we've ever recorded. Let your friends and colleagues in the game know about the show, so they can gain insights from some of the best minds in the game, from the grassroots to the NBA. Make sure you're subscribed to the Hoopheads Pod on your favorite podcast app. There are a ton of great nuggets you'll want to write down as you listen to this episode with Jeff Jansen from the Jansen Sports Leadership Center in Cary, North Carolina.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome from the Jansen Sports Leadership Center, Jeff Jansen. Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, great to be with you guys.
Excited to have you on tonight and get a chance to talk to you a little bit about all the great things that you're doing, helping athletes and coaches develop better cultures within their team and develop leaders. Want to start by asking you why you decided to pursue and why you became so passionate about helping coaches and athletes become better leaders and develop better cultures within their team.
Yeah, fortunately, I was one of those young kids that really kind of knew what I wanted to do in life very early on. I had read a book called The Psychology of Coaching by Thomas Tutko and just really got intrigued about the intangible side of sports and the mental game and culture and leadership and all those kind of things that help teams win that may not always have the most talent out on the floor. So those things just always fascinated me. And just got real curious about all that and then went to school and got my degree in sports psychology and fortunately started with the University of Arizona and started working with all their sports teams with these areas. So the why for me has just been intrigued with all the intangibles and trying to teach those skills to coaches and athletes so that they could gain that mental edge as well.
As you've gotten into this more, I feel like people are much more, whether it's receptive or interested or have a greater understanding of how important these things are compared to, let's say, 15 to 20 years ago, where people may not have understood how important these types of skills were to the success of a team. So as you've gone on from when you started to where you are now, have you seen people be more, I don't know whether the word's receptive or been more interested in doing the things that you're talking about because people now better understand the impact that these things can have on their teams?
Yeah, most definitely. When I first started off, I was actually one of five people at the college level doing this. So I was one of the first five to actually be out there working with teams. So way back then, you know, people would kind of talk about this stuff, but I don't think they consciously put thought into it or certainly didn't have any programs or kind of systematic approach to it. So I was really fortunate to be one of the first ones at Arizona. Partly, I think the reason I got an opportunity to work with Arizona men's basketball is they were unfortunately losing in the first round to teams like East Tennessee State and Santa Clara and Miami of Ohio and teams that they shouldn't have been losing to. And that really gave me an opportunity to work on the mental side and team building and culture with Coach Olson's program. And, you know, it gave me a great opportunity to then work with a ton of other teams. So you're right that things have definitely become much more accepted. You know, a lot of teams now, a lot of schools now will have somebody that's working with their team either full time or part time. So it's been neat to see the evolution of this field, especially over the last 10, 20 years or so.
Yeah, I'm sure being on the cutting edge of it and getting in before everybody was out there was definitely exciting and gave you an opportunity to do something groundbreaking that people really weren't thinking about back when you first started. And so when you went to Coach Olson, what were some of the things that you talked with him about initially that you said, hey, here's some areas where I think we can focus on. Here's some ideas, some thoughts. Maybe talk a little bit about what you did in your first experience with the University of Arizona basketball team that you felt had a direct impact on what they were trying to accomplish as a team.
Yeah, I think the two main areas that we worked on with that program was team building and helping guys, especially, you know, Coach Olson was so fortunate to get a lot of talented guys on his team. And, you know, those guys wanted major minutes and major shots and things like that. So it's getting them to understand, okay, this is your role. This is how you're going to contribute best. Some of you are going to be scorers. Some of you are going to be defensive stoppers. Some of you are going to need to be rebounders. And if you all can play those roles to the best of your ability, then everybody's going to be successful. Everybody's going to get a lot more exposure and everybody's going to do some pretty special things. So my first year, fortunately, they bought into that kind of stuff and they were able to make the 94 Final Four in Charlotte that year. So certainly chemistry was a big part of it. And then the other part that we talked a lot about was the mental game and how to handle pressure situations and how to handle it when the other team goes on a 12-2 run and hopefully get things back together so you can get going on your own 14-2 run in the next 4 or 5 minute segment. So it was probably those two main things that we spent the most time on with that team, and they responded, you know, great to it.
So when you're doing those things, what exactly, for somebody who maybe doesn't understand what it is that you actually do. So you're saying I'm working with them on being able to handle adversity and handle stressful situations. How exactly do you go about doing that? Is that a series of conversations? Is that one-on-one? Is that as a team? Is that them being involved in activities that you put them through? Describe a little bit more of what your actual process is for helping them with doing those types of things.
Yeah, it is definitely a process. As coaches know, you know, as they're installing offenses and defenses and things like that, it's not something you do in one practice. It's something that you introduce like we do concept-wise. Okay, what does it look to be mentally tough? And how do you respond in such ways? And what does that look like? And, you know, we use a lot of analogies. So one of the analogies I use is a traffic light analogy. When you're in a green light, it means you're composed, you're confident, you're aggressive, you're taking it to people and you're playing the game. You can get in a yellow light where you're starting to get a little bit now nervous. You're starting to get a little bit tense. You're worried about a past mistake that you've made. And then you can get into a red light where now you're just really frustrated. You're fighting yourself. You're just really stuck in the past. You're not moving on to that next play. So we'll use a lot of those analogies and talk about those things then that they can understand in a non-pressure situation. And then, yes, we'll do a lot of activities with them where we will specifically put them in a pressure situation to see how they handle it. And we'll ask them, hey, what color light were you in? And then we'll teach them different skills of, okay, if you find yourself starting to get to that yellow or starting to get to that red, these are some things that you can do individually for yourself that will help get you back to a green or at least stay in that yellow and not go red. And if you're a team leader, we need to not only have you monitor your own traffic lights, but you have to monitor your teammates as well. So it's a lot of that. And then after a game and during a game, you're going to be monitoring at, you know, halftime, hey, when were we in the green? When were we in the yellow? When were we in the red? What were the percentages? What were the things that led us to that? So it's a lot of constant reinforcement of the good and some correction when it's not going so well.
So what are some examples of something that a player might do if they feel themselves drifting out of that green light towards a yellow or a red? What's something that a player could do who might be listening, or a coach that might be listening could suggest to one of their players when they feel themselves getting out of that zone where they're in control of their emotions, they're in control of their mental state, when they feel themselves losing that? What can they do to get themselves back to the place where they want to be?
Yeah, exactly. Great question. So one of the things we do is just, number one, is awareness. And a lot of times we'll have athletes put a green dot either on their hand or on their shoe as just a reminder out on the court. Hey, wait a second, before you inbound this ball, are you in the right color light where you need to be? So first one is to make sure they're aware of what color light they're in. Then what we do is talk about the three P's of proper focus. And those P's are being in the present moment, focusing on the positive things you want to have happen, and taking care of the process. So if a guy finds himself in a yellow or a red, it's probably because he's stuck on something that's happened in the past or is worried about something that hasn't even happened yet. So the big thing that we talk about there is get into the present moment, this possession, this side of the floor. And Coach K always uses the phrase next play. So no matter what happened offensively or defensively, we need to focus next play. So that's a kind of a mantra, or that's kind of a cue word that we'll use to get them back into the present moment. Positive is focusing on the positive things that you want to do versus the negative stuff you want to avoid. You want to take care of the basketball versus no turnovers. You want to obviously have a shot that's soft over the front of the rim versus don't miss another one. So putting in your head the positive things that you want to execute. And then last but not least is the process. Obviously, you want to score offensively. Well, what do you need to do to do that? Well, obviously, what you need to do is really set up your man, really strong V cuts, going shoulder to shoulder off screens, being ready to catch the ball in that shooting pocket and ready to trust yourself and shoot. So it's all those little things that if we can focus on doing those well, then we're probably going to position ourselves to get that basket that we want. So those three P's, the present, the positive, the process, are the things that we drill over and over and try to come up with keywords and phrases and other things that they can do. So that's the mindset that they have out there on the court versus all that yellow and red light stuff.
So how much variance is there when you work with a team of 15 players? How much variance is there in a player's innate ability, is probably the wrong way to say it, but going into, let's say they haven't heard the things that you're talking about, how much variance is there in the skill that kids go into that with before they start working on the process? In other words, is there one kid who's already 90% there and someone else is at 10%? Do most kids fall kind of in the middle? How receptive are they to that particular type of training? Just talk a little bit about how varied it is when you go in and start working with a team, where kids fall on that scale of being able to go through those steps.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, you're probably going to have one or two kids that hopefully do that pretty well. They're probably in that green 80% of the time. There may be a few times when they get into the yellow here and there, and they do a great job of never allowing or seldom allowing themselves to get into that red zone. So those are those mentally tough kids. Those are the ones that, you know, a lot can happen to them and they keep playing, they keep fighting. Hopefully that's going to be one of your starters. Ideally, that's going to be your point guard,
right?
A guy who's going to really run that show for you. And that's what you're trying to train him to do, is not only handle the ball well and shoot from the outside and get people the ball where they need to, but a huge job that he's going to have to do is be that mental game for the team. So not only is he going to need to be in that green 80 or 90% of the time or more, but his job is also looking at the body language of his teammates, looking at how they're responding to these things, and then knowing what typically gets them into a yellow or a red, and also knowing, hey, is this a guy I need to get in his face and tell him this, you need to start playing? Or is this a guy who's a little more fragile? I got to go over and talk a little more calmly, put my arm around him. You're all right. You got this. So that's a big part of it. But yeah, there are some kids who really struggle with it, that maybe they're only in the green 30, 40, 50% of the time, and they've got a really short yellow. They're hardly in the yellow, and they're right down to that red zone. They're frustrated. They got horrible body language. They're yelling at the officials. They're not giving eye contact to the coaches. So, yeah, those are the ones that the coaches are like, I have a hard time dealing with this kid because he's got such a short time in the green, such a short yellow, and he's almost in that red zone all the time. So there is a big variance there, and that's, you know, part of my job is to understand, okay, who really struggles with this? And then it's very individual too. You know, some kids might respond more to keywords. Some kids might respond to something different. So it is kind of a trying to figure out, okay, what makes this person tick? What are the things that tend to really throw them off? And for some kids, it's almost everything, a ticky-tack call. They're going in the tank right away, and other kids, as you know, are really mentally tough. So that's part of the coach's job too, is not only to look at their physical skills and all that, but they're trying to assess their mental game and how can I help this kid be in that green light as much as possible. And that's something that we'll do then following a game, is look at where we were team-wise overall in the greens, yellows, and reds, and then individually have conversations with guys and ask them, you know, hey, where do you think you were at this point in the game when the other team went on a run and you didn't really pull people together? You stopped communicating. Where do you think you were? So, you know, most of the time, especially if you've got on video, they kind of know where they were. Okay, well, let's learn from that. How can we cut that yellow or red time that you were in for a 4-minute span? How can we cut that down to just a few possessions versus the 8 possessions that we had, and then we had to pull you out of the game?
So how much time does it take you to get to know the team and those individual kids to be able to have those type of conversations where they're building that trust with you, where they can share, which are things that are obviously their insecurities about their performance on the floor? How much time do you spend with them getting to know them so that you know which buttons to push with which kids and which triggers are going to help them to better control their mental state? How much time does it take to really get to know the kids so that you can accurately assess and then help them go through those stages that you were just talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much like a coach. The more time you can invest, the more time you can be around and, you know, really involve them in that process. Like I said, instead of coming down on them, you were in the red most of the game and all that. Hey, let's take a look now. It's been a couple days since you played. Let's take a look. And where do you think you were? And how often do you think you were in the green? And how often yellow, red? So it's those conversation kind of things. And when I first started, I was full time with the University of Arizona for 8 years and worked with all their teams. So I could be at a ton of their practices and I was watching most of their games. So when I started with them, I was there all the time. Now, as my kind of career has evolved and professionally, some teams I am there more often and can do that kind of stuff. Other teams, I'm doing leadership academies, which means I'm coming in 4, 5, 6 times a year and don't have that time that I used to be able to invest with the team because I'm flying in and working with them. So now what I'm doing is working much more with the coaches and the leaders of the team so that they can play that role within the team because they're with each other so much more. And what's fortunate is that, you know, a lot of the kids now, because hopefully because of my experience and things that I've seen, they're going to trust me and give me that credibility and open up to me, even though they're not going to see me quite as much as they used to back in the Arizona days. But it is something that obviously we're trying to train the leaders of the team to play that role versus just wait for somebody to pop in and maybe do that every now and then.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up.
All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
If I'm a high school basketball coach and I'm trying to develop leadership within my team, one of the quotes that we often hear is that player-led teams are more successful than coach-led teams. So if I'm a high school basketball coach and I want to develop leaders on my team, what does that process look like? What are some of the things that I should be focusing on as a high school coach? And I'm starting practice in the fall, or I've been working with my team in the summer, and I really want to get them prepared and have leaders on my team. What should I be trying to do in order to do that?
Yeah, great question. And that's what, you know, really got me started in this, is there were a lot of coaches just saying, hey, we need you to step up and lead. And there wasn't a whole lot more teaching or education with that. So I started, you know, looking at what the best leaders were doing and talking to the coaches and asking them, hey, what do you need from your leaders? And put together what we have now is our team captain's leadership manual. And it breaks down leadership into a bunch of different things. But one of the things where we start with is being a leader by example. And as most of your coaches know, the leader by example may not say a whole lot, but they're one of your hardest workers at practice. They do a great job of maintaining their composure. They make good decisions off the court. And when things aren't, you know, going well, they are able to keep some confidence and hope going. If they want to be a leader, if coaches want to develop leaders, is we have to find those best leaders by example, because they're going to have credibility with their teammates because they are a hard worker. They're going to have that poise and composure that I talked about before. So we really start with, what does it mean to be a leader by example? And that's kind of our first layer of leadership development. Now you have the ability and the platform to be a vocal leader. And what a vocal leader is going to do is be one of two things that we talk about: being an encourager. When you see great commitment and confidence and composure and character from your teammates, you're going to call that out and say, hey, great job with your work ethic and practice today. That's going to help you. That's going to help this team. And the other thing that they need to do is be the enforcer. So if they don't see good commitment, confidence, composure, or character from their teammates, they also need to step up and say, you know what? We need more from you right now. We're going to win the conference this year. The attitude that you're giving us, or the work ethic in the weight room that you're showing, that's not going to get us there. And we need more from you right now. So what we do is try to break down those leadership skills, and we do evaluations of kids as well too, and have their coaches evaluate them, especially if they're looking at developing kids or naming captains, that we have them evaluate themselves and be evaluated on their ability to be a leader by example and a vocal leader. And then we break, as I said, all those skills down into tangible kind of activities and tangible actions that kids should be doing at each of those levels. So for a coach, what they should do is look at, hey, who are kids who I think could be a leader for our program probably a year or two down the road, and invest some time teaching them how to be really strong leaders by example. And then for the kids that we need strong leadership from for this season, then hopefully they do have that solid leader by example. And now we're going to focus on teaching them to be a vocal leader, a better encourager when they do see good things, and also an enforcer, which is the area that I see kids struggle with the most. They don't want to hold their teammates accountable.
All right. So I have two questions. I want to follow up on that piece about holding kids accountable, because I know that's an issue. But I wanted to jump back and ask you about, from a coaching perspective, and this is just me speculating, but it would seem to me that oftentimes when a coach says, I'm looking for somebody who's a leader, they often skip the step of looking for that kid who leads by example, and they start immediately looking for a kid who's going to be a vocal leader, and they don't focus on making sure that all those other pieces that you described of being a leader by example. It would seem to me that occasionally coaches would skip that first step and kind of gloss over that and not appreciate maybe the kid who's the quiet lead by example type and is looking for somebody to immediately be a rah-rah type of, you know, whatever, traditional team captain, or what we sometimes think of as somebody who's being a leader. Do you see that being the case where coaches kind of skip over that step and start putting, I guess, leadership burden on somebody who's maybe not ready for it because they haven't mastered that first step?
Yeah, I do. I think that can be a problem sometimes as you look at, okay, who's really vocal, but the biggest problem there is a credibility issue, because if that guy is telling everyone else, hey, you need to work harder, you need to maintain your poise and composure, but they look at that guy and say, okay, you missed a bunch of open gyms this summer, you don't work that hard in the weight room, and you aren't touching all the lines in conditioning, that guy's just lost his entire platform and credibility of leadership right there. So I think you do definitely, if you're going to open up your mouth, you've got to make sure you're walking that talk first.
Absolutely. All right. And then you mentioned that holding teammates accountable is one of the most difficult things that you can ask, I think, an athlete to do, because athletes oftentimes look at their teammates as peers, and sometimes it's hard to hold your peers accountable. So when you get a kid who is a great leader by example, who has that encouragement piece down, now they're missing that one final step. What are some things that a coach could do with that type of kid to get them over the hump where they can now not only be that encourager, but they can also be the enforcer?
Yeah, great question. And that too is a big area that we've seen is a problem. So we put together a manual there as well, the how to hold your teammates accountable manual. And it is something that it is a process too. It's you don't just jump to, you know, being that enforcer. As you said, there's some steps that you have to really fulfill beforehand. Those of being a leading by example, you have to specify really what the standard is. What is the expectation? Because if you haven't made that clear, whether you're a coach or a captain, it's hard to hold people accountable to them. You want people to be bought into those standards. They can't just be, well, it's coach's rule, I'm doing this because coach wants us to. No, we're doing this because this gives our program the best chance of getting to the goals that we want. So that's why we have this standard in place. You have to have a measurement system of what those standards are so that people can see, am I hitting it? Am I exceeding it? Am I falling short of it? You need to then call out the people in a good way who are consistently hitting it, and certainly giving a lot of love to the people who are exceeding it, because not only does that reward them, that puts them up as a great example of what you want to be your program to be all about. And then last but not least, when they do then fall short of those standards, you've got to take a look at, okay, was this a willful kind of thing, or was this just kind of a innocent freshman mistake? And we'll get that corrected, because you're going to coach and correct people differently than if you need to really kind of come down harder on somebody if they did it willfully. And then the other question is, okay, was this just a minor little transgression? Hey, we need you here at 3 o'clock and you were here at 1 second after. And then it's a clarification. Hey, you've got to be here at 3 o'clock. That happens again, that's going to be a problem. Or did they show up at 3:59 and now this is a big issue? So I think you have to look at the severity of it as well as how frequent it is. And then it's going back to reminding people, these are the standards that we have. These are why they're in place, because they give us the best chance of being successful. These are the people who are doing it and we're showing them appreciation. And if you're not doing it, this is going to cause you a problem. Could be a playing time issue, could be withholding privileges from you. And not only does that cause you a problem, that causes us a problem, because not only does it hurt our chances of getting where we want to go, and we need you to make some adjustments so that you can get back to the standards we all need to be effective.
So it would seem to me that based on everything that you just said, that one of the things that would be most important for any coach to do would be to make sure that when you're looking at these types of skills, when you're trying to develop leaders, that you are being very, very intentional about what you do in a practice setting and what you're observing and the type of feedback that you're giving to your players. Because it feels like if I'm a coach and I go into a practice and I'm not intentional about reacting to what I see from my players in terms of these types of things, that I'm going to end up not noticing them the way I should, not recognizing them. And then the effort that I may want to put into this may not pay off because I'm just not intentional enough with my actions and my words and the way that I'm going about doing it. It seems like I have to be very intentional as a coach to make sure that I'm taking these steps to developing the types of leaders that you're talking about. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think the key word that you mentioned is certainly intentional. This has to be, and the best coaches are. I mean, Coach K, Roy Williams, you know, all the great coaches out there are extremely focused in on who my leaders are going to be and how can I groom them and how are they impacting our culture and is this where we need to be? So I think intentional is really important. And then the other part that I think goes right along with that is proactive. The more proactive you can be, the less reactive you're going to have to be later when it's become a big problem. And that's where I see the really good coaches invest the time in the off season or preseason with their leaders, identifying who those potential kids might be, going through our captain's manual with them on a weekly basis, and then having these important discussions. What are our goals for this year? And what are the standards going to be? And what kind of leader by example are you? And how comfortable are you being a vocal leader? And are there certain teammates that you have a hard time holding them accountable, whether they're because of your roommate or they just don't react the way you want them to? And I think having all these conversations and working through these things on the front end really helps prevent a lot of those issues that derail and destroy teams either mid-season or certainly once the playoffs come around, because now the pressure is just extra thick and these things that we should have dealt with or talked about or processed earlier, now they're slamming us in the face because we never really worked through those issues.
Jeff, it's been some great information. I want to give you a chance before we wrap up here to share how people can get in touch with you, learn more about the resources that you have available, and how they can just get in touch with you and find out more about what you do. And then when you're done doing that, if you have anything that we didn't hit on that you want to leave our coaches with a parting shot before we get out of here, that would be great.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I mean, I've been fortunate now to work with a ton of teams in basketball and outside of that for the last 25 or 30 years. And it's been an honor and a privilege to learn from some really special coaches. And that's what I try to do, is put all these intangible things into a format and framework that makes it easy to teach to kids so that they can have things out on the floor. So certainly a website, jansensportsleadership.com, and have a ton of resources on there. I do a monthly blog, and I'm certainly on Twitter at jansenleader. Jansen's J-A-N-S-S-E-N. And certainly during the school year, we're putting out, lots of different things that you can share with your people. And yeah, through the years, what's been really fun about my job is I just kind of see what are the hot issues that coaches really, struggle with and see as key. So when I first started, it was kind of the mental training and mental game. And then it evolved into team chemistry. And then it evolved into how do you have great coaching and really connect with kids. And then it evolved into the team leaders and culture and competitiveness. And now my latest book is What It Takes to Win Championships, because I've been fortunate to see over 30 teams win national championships. So, all those resources are out there. And my job has really been to just learn from great coaches and athletes and put it into a framework that makes it really simple for other people to use. So hopefully those are some resources that some of your coaches and listeners would benefit from as well.
Absolutely. We're going to put all that in the show notes when we release the episode. And we can't thank you enough, Jeff, for spending some time with us tonight. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.